Okay, Benny Blau, hot take. What is the hardest part of business transformation?
In simple words, I would say endurance and execution. Everything else is PowerPoint and lip service.
Okay, I'm stealing that too.
You can. Quote me.
All right, all that and more on Transformers. What is transformation and who are the people leading the major transformations happening today? My name is Anne Fanai. I'm CIO and Vice President of Business Platform Transformation at IBM. Join me as I talk to my fellow nerds about what they do every day, how they spend their time, what their challenges are, and what the opportunities are. This is Transformers, an IBM Think podcast. Benny, thank you so much for joining me on Transformers. Just a real pleasure to have you here. Let me just take a pause and take a moment, let you introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Anne, and thanks for having me. So, Benjamin Blau, I'm a CIO of SAP, CPIO actually, so Chief Process and Information Officer. The process is important to me, not because I like long titles, but really like I want to put the process first before the technology. I've been leading the unit since a year by now, former roles in engineering, industry, applications, and customer experience space at SAP.
One of the things I thought was really fascinating as, you know, we've, you know, gotten to know each other, you're new, you know, you're pretty new in seat, I'm pretty new in seat, is our companies have a lot of parallel paths, right? So SAP, company with a long history, very rich history, ironically, I believe started by some IBM employees who left to start SAP. But I think as we've had a few conversations, we're finding completely unplanned, we've come to a lot of the same conclusions independently. Specifically, let me pull the thread on, you said Chief Process and Information Officer, and that's something, you know, I've seen a lot of as well. So could you, I'd love for you to share a little bit on, you know, your observation, and, you know, we can weave it in together with some of the stuff we're both seeing.
Right, right. I mean, as you said, we have a long history also, you know, coming from non-premise, heavy on-premise company now transitioning to the cloud. And I think that also has a major impact to the role of a CIO, right? So also, if you look at the capabilities of the company, that completely changed. So what has been non-strategic in the past, like order management, becomes kind of strategic in the cloud world because it's basically, you know, at the heart of, you know, where your entitlements are, upsells are, and so on. So I think there's a lot of stuff that has been changing also that, you know, being customer zero also for SAP and being the first one to basically implement our newest technology products, AI applications, is also very different in the cloud world. I mean, ideally, I would not even have engineering resources in my unit. Far out vision, but I think that's basically the journey you go through from an heavy on-premise company to a, I would say, hybrid, where, you know, on-premise part still pays the paychecks, but then you transition to cloud, and now we see this completely, you know, picking up and the transition working out, and by now I think we have a ratable revenue stream of above 80%, and that completely changes the CIO role.
Kind of going with that, like one of the things too, it's like a rate and pace thing too. It's not just the move from an on-prem to a SaaS world; it's the rate and pace. So, I mean, as you know, because our companies work so close together, is like I think last year for in a 12-month period, IBM rolled out what S/4HANA, SAP Commerce, SAP CPQ, SuccessFactors. We were the first ones to roll out the Fieldglass and Ariba in the NS2 U.S. federal government compliant right. environment. And by the way, thank you for the call out on your earnings call for the work the team has done. But it's, are you seeing something with that too, that the rate and pace of expectations, it's almost like I've seen like an impedance mismatch that we're trying to get over. So with Vended, you're a lot slower, like with the on-prem, you're a little bit slower, but SaaS, you're able to move faster. So we're trying to make that pivot, move at SaaS speeds when we're not completely there yet.
And I think if you also see what market requires these days, I think the pace is just adequately picking up with that demand, right? So if I think about the the variety of commercial models we have to put in place, like the variety of business models I have to support as a CIO, IT function, that really poses a lot of stress on your process, like really end to end across the whole company, across every board area. Now, if we were still on an fully on-premise stack, right, this would take like heavy investments, take way too long to pivot your commercial model, I don't know, from a subscription to a consumption-based, outcome-based model in order to keep track with what the market requires. And I think that's another, as you rightfully pointed out, a big change to how a CIO function operates these days.
When we were catching up yesterday, we were talking about process, though. So I want to, like, going back to the process component, similar, what I've seen is the hardest thing is the people angle of it. And I come from a world where I believe everyone has positive intent. I truly am an optimist, believe the best in everybody, but it's sometimes we like it or not, and whether IBM, SAP, could be any company out there, you start to say, wait, this is the way I do it. This is the way it works. And it's kind of hard to see your way out of that sometimes. And, I know a lot of what we've seen is just how do we start to build, a North Star for how do we sell and how do we take the entire, order to cash end-to-end components. What are you seeing in SAP as the hardest pieces with the process piece?
Yeah, I think it's always a fine line and a fine trade-off between, push and pull, and you have it mandated versus have really involved people very early to make them part of the solution at the end of the day. And I mean, SAP did a bold move beginning of last year when we basically consolidated all operations functions across the company into a single board area. And it turned out that like the luxury position also I am in and we are in is now we have a very stringent line of control from strategy to execution, right? So basically everything that happens on the strategy side is not lip service and PowerPoint, but it's really like the same account. So the person who invents it is basically also accountable to drive it to execution. And I, for us, that was a big, big game changer. And that doesn't mean you have to, you push it down, but you involve your counterparts and the business partners early on. That's still the case. However, now we have a very clear separation of also swim lanes where the strategy basically explains the why, business explains what they want to achieve. My team basically designs the process, basically the how we get there. And then I, in an agile fashion, we implement, have the business providing feedback, and then come to the final solution that at the end of the day achieves the what basically the business defined in the first place. And the whole model is, it turned out really like really great so far.
So what did you find the most challenging piece that? Because I like the way you described that as everyone has their swim lanes explaining the what, the why, the how. And, again, my brain immediately went to like, okay, well, strategy sometimes is the what, and they kind of start to step into the how, and can we, create a demo of this? How do you ensure you're getting the most out of that swim lane separation?
Yeah, it's also like if you involve your business counterparts, there's always this chicken egg problem of they don't know what they don't know. So like, typically, you would say process business first and then technology second. However, in reality, you have to do formats like hackathons and other things to basically educate them in a positive way that they know what's possible technology-wise, especially with AI, in order for the business to come up with the idea of what they want to achieve, given assuming that's all possible technology-wise. And I think that completely also changes the game of what you can achieve and what you can change also in your processes, also disruptively partly. And that's from my point of view, how you break that chicken egg problem between process technology and the right sequencing.
It kind of tends this, going back to you said when you introduced yourself, you said CIO, I mean CPIO. I've got this notion that we talked about a lot in my team of there's a changing role of the CIO in this world. The expectations of a CIO, I think, if we go back say, like even as few as 10 years ago, it's you're a cost center, you're a consolidation center. It is, how are you streamlining every dollar you spend? And a lot of times CIOs might be, they might have flipped over from a CFO or a COO function. And now a lot of times you're seeing more CIOs that are deep technologists saying, hey, it's, to your point, maybe I don't need all the programmers, but where I do need that deep technical knowledge, maybe I do need engineers, is how do you get them talking to each other? How do you get them, how do you ensure the data is clean? You get your data scientists involved. And one of the things I kind of just, I'll throw this one at you and see if you agree or disagree, is I think there's this role a CIO has now that is really more tied to partnerships. So I think about, like, again, SAP and IBM, is it's to really build that partnership. And so I would look to SAP and say, show me how you do it. Show me what the best looks like. And, you know, you might say, well, Anne, bring your Watson X product. Show me how you're actually using them in a CIO. And it's much more tight partnership at the CIO to CIO level to actually drive the company to be better as a whole.
Right. I mean, there's so many facets now in your statements. Where do I start?
It's too long of a question. I should have
brought it. It's good. I just need to sort my mind. So first of all, I think, so being customer zero leads to a lot of very nice discussions I can have with partners and customers, because I don't carry quota. I can be fully authentic in, I'm one of you, and now I tell you, you know, what worked for me and what didn't work. And I think that's highly appreciated. And I think that also how it should work between partners that are maybe at the same time customers, at the same time competitors, which is also okay. But it is, there needs to be a certain level of trust to exchange on, you know, reality of our products, for example. So that part of the role I really enjoy. I think that has picked up lately. And to your first statement on, is it a cost center or is it a strategic function? For me, it's very clear. It's very obvious. It's a highly strategic function, because if you look at our financial plan that we communicated to the market, without IT, there's no possibility to get that operating leverage and that scale that the company needs in order to decouple revenue growth from our cost structure, right? So that's like, there's many people that would rather invest in my unit than, you know, to hire more people in a certain function, because they know, especially with AI, there's a lot of potential to further scale out and widen that share between revenue and cost.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think we've been playing around with the concept of value realization. And I think that's a notion that you were looking at. I remember talking to a few of your folks as well, is the notion of, you know, this is really to make that full pivot about truly being where we're in a location you invest in, where something that is strategic is, you know, understanding, like, any project we take on, what is the value to IBM? What is the value, the revenue it might drive? What is the sales productivity metric? What is the operating productivity metric it may be? And then tying it to, like, it's this scope, and really trying to say, so now you get the cost to drive the value, and then keeping everybody honest. So it is a little bit of the software development practice, I think, fusing in, is understanding, you know, except our end user is the internal, you know, the internal corporation. So how are you guys approaching anything in those ways as well?
Yeah, I mean, in multiple facets. So first of all, I think to our customers, we guide our customers also in a value-based approach always. So there's value management for every plan you might have with our products. At the same, we do basically the same thing for us internally. So I'm a big fan of what I would call full P&L circle. So whatever I do or where I invest, there needs to be a clear case. And it needs to be also at some point hardwired, or at least hitting the P&L, either in top line or in bottom line. Otherwise, why would you invest in the first place? And that whole notion of value management also we apply for AI cases specifically. So I truly believe it's not about, with AI, it's not about quantity. It's really about quality. I would rather have 5 killer cases in the company than hundreds and hundreds of good ideas. And that's also why we apply a very stringent value management process intake channel for the ideas that, you know, all the functions and business partners generate, for us then to really settle on a certain limited set of cases where we feel, okay, that really creates value. And that's basically the same case that we then also can can carry to our partners and customers and explain to them what's in with that product and that AI case.
I love that because I know one of the things we've seen, and it's actually been a surprise to me, is there's a couple cases we've built internally that we've gotten phone calls saying, hey, actually I could sell this. And I was reviewing a contract, like it was actually a component that leads to the AI kind of being a cleaner implementation. Like, wow, we can sell some of these things we're doing. And again, it just, as I said to my boss, I said, it's nice to be on the P side of a P&L sometimes, you know? It's really nice to be on.
Right, that feels good, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we talked about two components here. One is the people and one is the AI. And, you know, they're not really all that separate. What is your point of view on really the human impact of AI, how people are feeling it and you know, with the opportunity or challenges are?
It's probably the elephant in the room, right, in every AI discussion. And I can feel it's a mix basically of like excited about what's possible, at the same time concerned about what might, you know, impact certain roles at the company and so on. And I mean, for me personally, I don't know if you know the Jevons paradox. It basically says if you get more efficient using a resource, typically you would think the demand goes down, but it actually goes up. Right, so we see the same with the GPUs and the stock market reacting to it, and I think it's the same for people also in a software company, because while you get way more productive using AI, I think the demand even outpaces that productivity gain. Right, so what I'm trying to say is, it's we're not getting rid of people. It's quite the opposite, right? You can do even more with the same, and I think it's a very optimistic outlook from my point of view, because you can do more things, you can do more complex things, and you can even create more value for economy. And I think that's, from my point of view, a very promising idea.
So accurate, because I think it's been a lot of the fear the other way, that, and I think that is what we're seeing. It's like, okay, now you have the opportunity to do faster, move faster. And we've been having conversations over here too, is like, you think of organizations like maybe a pyramid shape, right? There can only be one CEO, there can only be one. And there's a lot of folks here, and it actually kind of, it squeezes the bottom and it becomes more of a diamond shaped, I think, with AI.
Oh, that's a nice analogy. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. So with that diamond, but it also forces folks' skills up faster, right? Like you learn very quickly and then you kind of have that opportunity to squeeze up a little higher. So yeah, I love that.
Right.
So like pivoting a little bit really tactically, I think some of the, I suspect a shared challenge we have also is with kind of the history behind both of our companies is we're dealing with a lot of that application sprawl. And so, you know, I think you highlighted very nicely, you know, process leading technology, but it's not really that clean. It's not really one after the other. One of the things we've come across a lot is, but I've used this tool that was like a homegrown tool for 10 years and I knew this. And so we've been trying to get really creative on some of the applications for all like, okay, wait, I can see who's used this and no one's touched it in 6 months. What happens if I, you know, what's the old term, scream test? What happens if I turn the power button off? And if no one complains for like a couple months, then that was a good call, right? And we've seen that be, maybe I shouldn't say this with any IBM employees watching, we've seen it actually be more successful than not. you know, you think you need something and you don't. So again, we're going through creative ways to do the very tactical pieces that drive us to the higher value, that drive us to better AI implementation. How does that play out? Am I making a bad interpretation about what's happening in your environment, or is that aligned?
No, I mean, to be quite frank here. So I think it's CIO in a software company is like the worst industry you can be a CIO because everyone knows it better. Everyone can do it themselves, right? So this is like, that's the scenario and the environment you have to, you know, operate.
I'm glad that one's not just me, because I'm everywhere.
And I mean, I'll be honest with you, right? So shutting things down internally is quite an emotional topic. And it's like, it's this typical long tail, right? At the end, you get to a certain, you know, degree of population where you convince people to shut it down. But then there's like this long tail of the last mile that really gets emotional. It's really tough to make a final call there. I think it's it's a tough one, and it's like we want to cater for the best employee experience at the same time, right? But at the same time, you also need to make sure we cannot be a zoo of you know, also internal applications, external applications, homegrown, customized things.
No, I'm smiling because I'm going to use your word zoo. I've never used that. I'm totally going to say we're a zoo. So just, if you hear that, I will give you credit as I heard it from here. And it's interesting as a contrast, I think, this conversation. One of my previous guests is a CTO doing rounds, and he's done multiple private equity companies and started out in large companies himself. And he's like, but the really difference in private equity is, there's a much clearer understanding of the value of the company, right? The company's value is building this product, getting you anything more in an HRIS than the base function is not needed. Anything more in your ERP, your CRM, like the base is needed. And I think I found it to be an interesting balance because I did a couple turns with private equity myself of like, there's really this like absolute mindset focus on the product versus as a business scales, you do have to add more function. Is that some perspective that you or some of your folks on your team that you're as you build up process, is that something you guys think about as well?
So I'm personally a big fan of lean principles. So I mean it's a very rough way to structure your workforce, but it's like there are the three categories of value adding, necessary, non-value added, waste, right? And if you think radically in those categories, what you want to do basically is maximize the value adding piece, minimize the non-value adding necessary piece, and then completely eliminate the waste part. And I think it's a very, you cannot apply it to that extreme, but it's a very good way of thinking about things in a radical way to then settle on something that is meaningful for everyone, but then brings the company forward. It's a very nice way of training your thought process when you look at the process, right? Do you really need this? Is this really creating either a better product or does it lead to top line, right? If you cannot answer any of those questions with yes, it's probably either in the second or in the third category.
And one of the questions one of my colleagues uses is, you don't want to ever find purpose in the process. It's purpose in the outcome and right. The value, right? Yeah. So I'm going to do a kind of a hard pivot too. So, when one of the purposes of this podcast is, we're all humans, right? We are all human beings. And it's a little bit about the people behind some of the big transformations happening. And, I'll pick on this. So, you live in a very forward-thinking world. Like, again, you've got a PhD, you're leading amazing things at SAP, always thinking forward to the next thing. But I'd be curious, how do you have an interesting way of kind of relaxing when you're not at work with something maybe a little retro?
Yeah, it's pretty retro. So my world is digital. It's zeros and ones, maybe with quantum computing, something in between. But at the end of the day, when I come home, I really like to enjoy like old fashioned vinyl records. Like I have a larger collection of music and I really like the non-digital part of it and the ancient, also sometimes backward looking part of it. So that's maybe a good compensation for my business life.
No, I love that. And I think I was sharing with you, I like books, like physical books. I get like, it's that sit on the couch at the end of a long day, maybe not with vinyl going, but just in quiet and just, it's almost like it's a recharging. Maybe that's just being an introvert in my case. I don't want to speak for you, but it's for me.
The same thing. I even carry books on a plane where people think I'm completely...
Oh, I know. The number of people that have looked at me like I'm insane when I put this book out on and like there's all the people on their, on their Kindles or tablets and I'm like pulling out a book and it's just like, okay, well, okay. So thank you. I appreciate you sharing a little bit about yourself and certainly love partnering with you and working with you and your insights on transformation, innovation, and everything you're doing. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Anne. It was really a pleasure. And also thanks for the partnership.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode and we really hope you'll join us again next time. Thank you.